Hello and welcome to this week's dialect. Welcome to Dialect. Hello to all in Preston and in St Albans, and even in South America, we're told. And of course, our Bristol listeners. We have a Bristol man in today, Sakir Yildirim, who has recently returned from helping with rescue work in the earthquake zone of Turkey. Sakir, who until recently at least ran a kebab van in fish ponds, volunteered after seeing scenes of devastation in his country on TV. A roving reporter is in Istanbul at the moment on an adventure. We've got part two of what she's up to in the city of Istanbul right now. Tony Gosling brings us the second part of the Good Church Guide, which you may have heard last week. Mike Noyce, our usual engineer, speaks to the local band called Elegance. They're on his sofa. As usual, we have another episode of Treasure Island, read by Malcolm Grieve, some poetry, today from Tim Burrows, and of course the Watson Guide with Jeff Sparks later on. I'm John Peters Coleman. Bristol man Sakir Yildirim has returned from helping with his rescue work in the earthquake zone of Turkey. Sakir, who until recently at least ran a kebab van in fish ponds, volunteered to help after seeing scenes of devastation in his country on television. He spent the last 2 weeks living in a tented village organised by the international aid charity IHH and distributed food and support to families in the earthquake zone. And he's here with me now. Hello.
Hi.
So here in Bristol, where were you when you first heard about what was going on in Turkey?
Well, that was on a Sunday afternoon, I think it was around 2 o'clock, watching TV. Then it's like, it's flash, 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 earthquake in Turkey. And sat there and watched it all day long, and I thought, well, I think I need to go. But I had an important meeting on a Tuesday, so I thought, shall I hang on till then or not? But then, shall I go and shall I not? Yeah. And shall I go and shall I not? But the next, well, Sunday night and Monday night, it was a hell trying to sleep. And then decided on the Tuesday that I should go, bought the ticket, I had the meeting, and then jumped on the flight and off to Turkey.
So rewinding a bit, what is your history? You're from Turkey originally. When did you come to England?
England, probably about 25 years ago now.
Okay. Yeah. So how close is where what's happening in Turkey to where you used to live?
What's happening?
How close is the earthquake?
Oh, no, it's not. It's probably about 8-9 hours drive, so probably talking about 800 kilometres.
Okay. Well, I guess for a country the size of Turkey, that's probably not too
far. Well, that's quite near where, I come from Black Sea, so Van is quite north, so 800 kilometres.
Yeah.
That's the nearest point, actually.
Okay. You have a wife and three children, I understand. What was their response to you suddenly saying, well, I'm going to go to Turkey?
Well, I'm going off to Turkey. And they go, oh, okay. Yeah, they support me on these things now. Okay. They got used to it.
I mean, you've got a bit of previous history with suddenly disappearing off to foreign climes to help people. You're also known for your personal humanitarian aid work following the attack on Gaza in the winter of 2008 and 2009. You bought an ambulance on eBay.
Yes, on eBay, and decided to go. Wanted to go over to Viva Palestina, and they turned around and I said, well, sorry, you're a bit late. So I've decided they went through North Africa, and I decided to go other way, Europe, into Turkey, Syria, Jordan, Egypt, then into Gaza. Okay. Made it.
And at that time, had you done anything like that before?
Nope. I'd done some homework before. I'd go on Google, find how to go there. So, yeah, I thought, well, if I can't go through North Africa, it must be another way. So when I Googled it, I got stuck on the crossing between Jordan and Egypt, and with a bit more digging into Google, I did find out there was a ferry running. Well, they said it was 2 hours, but it took about probably 8 hours. It was only half an hour's crossing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, after 2 days waiting on the border, they wouldn't let me in, and I wouldn't go back. And there were some other people turned up, and then they said, well, we can go with them. And, I went into Gaza without any problem.
Okay. Let's bring ourselves forward to Turkey and describe what it was like, you know, when you arrived. I mean, how did you get into Turkey? You flew there, so where did you land?
Land in Istanbul and waited about 6 hours for another flight to Van.
Mm.
And then by the time I got there, it was late, and I couldn't find a vehicle to go to Erciş, where the earthquake happened. So, yeah, I went there in the morning with some more IHH volunteers arrived. And
did you know of them before? Or did
oh,
you,
yes, yes.
So you're expecting them?
Well, this is it. I know some of the people who work with the IHH, and there were some volunteers. When I actually got to Urgish, shock of my life. Most of the people from Harvey Marmara was there helping. You know, I've been to, well, I was trying to go to Gaza with Harvey Marmara.
And okay, you know, so Harvey Marmara is the name of the ship that you were on when you went on a convoy.
That's right,
to Gaza,
yeah.
For people who don't know. And that was the ship that was actually boarded by the Israelis.
Israelis, yeah.
And you were on that boat.
Yes.
And all of those people are on that boat. You were suddenly surprised to find out we're in Turkey.
That's right. Well, I mean, yeah, there was the people from Turkey, but obviously they come from a different part of the Turkey to help them as well. So, I mean, when I got there, I probably knew about 10 of them already, not 20.
That must have made you feel quite positive, you know, at least you've got, you know, some compadres to help with rather than being on your own.
That's right, yeah. There was actually, I think we had about 100 people working inside the warehouse, unloading and loading the vans, so we could go out there and just distribute to people.
So what notice did the Turkish government give to you know, people sort of turning up from abroad to help? Did they pay
No. Just people just went, I suppose. Like me, I've decided to go and I went.
I imagine in a chaotic situation.
Well, every little bit helps.
Yeah.
This is what I think. And, you know, there was loads of different people. From different parts of the world and from Turkey.
Do you ever feel like you're really putting yourself in danger when you go to these places? I mean, there must have been...
Well, I got used to it, I think.
You got used to it?
Well, I mean, I've been bombed. Well, when we was in Jordan trying to go over to, if you remember, articulated lorry going over to Gaza, from Bristol to Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
I think they wanted to scare us. It was just border with the Jordan in Israel.
Yeah.
And they sent some missiles into the sea. We was trying to protest, obviously, Israel. What they were doing is wrong. And I had that, and I've been bombed, I suppose, on the border, going into Gaza, and obviously on the Marmara.
So that almost sounds like once it had happened, you thought, that wasn't really so bad.
Yeah.
Is that what it was like?
Yeah.
Really?
And we've been shot at, and obviously, what else? We've been thrown stones in Egypt. So, yeah, earthquake isn't that bad.
Okay. I don't know if this sounds like a silly question, but what are the most pressing needs that you found people really needed in an earthquake zone? What did they actually need?
I think experience was... I suppose a heater and a food, a bit of a hot food and hot shower for me. That was didn't wash for about 10 days, but it was cold, and even if you had the hot water, I don't think you would have wanted to wash anyway. It was -2 in the evening. It's -14 now last night, and there were some fires on tents and stuff, people trying to get
did you see a lot of casualties on the ground?
Well, I did not want to see, to be honest. I didn't want to go near the sites. I did, but I've seen enough blood on Marvin Marmara, so I didn't want to...
So you kept yourself away from that?
Away from it, yeah. Okay. As much as I wanted to go and help with the wreckage, but I just couldn't do it.
No, I don't think anybody would blame you about that at all.
Well, after what happened in Harvey Marmara, I've seen enough blood, I think, another year maybe.
How did your experience on Harvey Marmara change you? How did you feel that you changed by the time when you got back to home to Bristol? How did you feel you changed from since when you'd left?
Well, I mean, that's a bit difficult question.
Yeah.
A lot of things changed, I think, in my mind. It's like I was there with those people trying to go to Gaza, and next minute they got killed lying dead next to me. And I was talking to him about an hour ago, half an hour ago, 10 minutes ago. And obviously started to think, well, we don't know what's around the corner, so keep helping people. So that's why I just keep helping people. I want to help people. And so I can go to bed end of the night.
I mean, some people in that situation would feel like, or would perhaps be told, you know, that they were naive to go in the first place and think, oh, well, I won't go again.
No, I won't go again.
But you've kept the hope alive that, you know, you knew it was the right thing to do that.
Well, I mean, if my mama goes again, I will go again.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. I thought of that a few months back, actually. And there was some talks about my mama would be going. And I thought, would I ever go again? And when I thought about people in Gaza, then I've decided I would definitely go again. There's no doubt.
Have you got a lot of sort of love and support from, you know, being able to speak to people about it, like, you know, your friends and your family when you've got back home?
Yes. I mean, they didn't want me to go in the first place, but then what happened, I suppose they saw what was going on. That was awareness of what was going on in Gaza.
Yeah.
People think, well, why are you going? I mean, they're not your own people, you know, you don't know them, so it doesn't matter. But they live in an open prison in Gaza, and these people are just trying to kill them, so they wanted to push them out of their homes.
Do you think you might be able to persuade anybody you know to, you know, go back on another mission to Turkey if you were to go again?
Well, I don't know.
We'll have to wait and see if you inspire any other people.
That's right. I mean, there's Viva Palestina going soon. I really want to go on to that one, but we'll see next month.
Next month?
Next month.
There's another trip out next month.
Well, yeah, I'd love to go, but we'll see. We'll see how things are going. We need to get some donations in so we can buy some stuff.
Okay, well, harking back to Turkey just briefly towards the end, I mean, this does feel like a very short interview compared to, you know, everything that we've chatted about. But people can donate if they want to help what's going on in Turkey. So how can they do that?
Yeah, well, I mean, they can go into IHH's website and they can donate. I mean, I think as little as £2 to anything, really. They started the new thing, prefabric homes for people of Van.
Okay.
And I think they cost about 8,000 Turkish lira. I mean, I don't know how much is pound now. £2, £1 is 283. So talking about just over £3,000.
Okay.
For a prefabricated home. So anything could help, even £2.
Okay, so, well, the website for that I've got here is www.ihh.org.tr. Well, I suppose it's a point of information. What does IHH stand for?
That's International Humanitarian Aid.
Okay, right. This does feel, as I say, like a very short interview compared to the huge breadth and depth of what you've told me. So will you perhaps come back in a future weeks to tell us, you know, how you're getting on about your future humanitarian trips abroad? Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, Yildirim, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
BCFM Community Radio for Bristol on 93.2 FM. For more information or to listen live on the internet, go to our website at www.bcfm.org.uk. BCFM, your radio.
Anthea Page made it to Istanbul after her flight, as you heard in last week's part of the adventure. She's now in the city, exploring, and she finds out more about the Pudding Club, amongst other things.
Istanbul, je pense souvent à tes mosquées et à tes longs minarets qui s'élancent vers le ciel. Istanbul, Istanbul, j'ai soif de ces baisers. Istanbul, Istanbul, de sa peau veloutée, j'ai faim de son regard.
Adem.
Can you tell us about the pudding shop?
The pudding shop is a meeting point of the hippies at early 70s, where the people escaped from the Vietnam War. They were coming to all the way to Turkey and then all the way to India. It was the last stop at the European side. People used to meet each other. It was a meeting point. We used to have a notice board. People could get to contact each other here. And the sign on the wall, where to go, how to go, which places. That's why this place become famous. because of that. This place was only serving the puddings just before 70s. And that's the name called Lale Pastanesi, meaning of it Lale Tulip Shop. That's why people used to call this place when they see the dessert pudding shop, but only one place in the whole area selling the pudding. So the name given by the customers. When we change this place as a restaurant, we still keep the name on as a pudding shop.
So, do many people come back to see it?
Yeah, they are coming back. I can say every month, every 15 days, we have a people coming here. And the first thing they do is their luggage at the hotel. I saw the people, they come and hang me and cry it because they say that I have dreamed about this place so many times and I waited for so long to come and see. It's beautiful.
The people who run the pudding shop now, it's not the same owner?
Same owner. Actually, my father, he just passed away 11 years ago in 1998. And my uncle and I, we are still running the business. Same people.
Fantastic.
Thank you. And I have one very sad memories about the people coming here. So I realized a guy with two kids here, they were sad. So I just want to know why, you know. I just went there and asked about what's the story is, why you're so sad. Because they said that the father and the mother met each other here and they got married. And they got son and child. And the woman just died from cancer. And they were taking a boat to go to Boston and throw the ash. It was the saddest story that I have ever heard.
We're looking for a book, and this is all people who wrote messages in the 1960s.
Yeah, and the people...
Could you show me one letter?
Sure. This is from Frank and Scullin. They come very often, almost every year, when they were here in the hippies. And there's one bus driver. He used to come and he showed the program in the BBC that they made it. On the other side of the road, it's a front pudding shop, he saw that in the BBC. And after that, it's good feeling, he wrote us a letter that he knows us and we look so healthy and happy there. And then he just wrote some Turkish sign, it says, you know, Kurush and Lira, hello, how are you?
What date is that one?
The guy, he was here early 60s and beginning of the 70s. But the program has taken to the TV program about 10 years ago. It was taken by Mr. Simon. I tried to get his name.
Have you got any of the original notes asking people for lifts in the 60s?
No, not really. No, we don't. Sorry. We only have a note from after 70s. We had a fire upstairs. All the documents are gone. So we only have from 70s to up. No, I mean 2011, unfortunately.
Outside the pudding shop, and there's an ice cream seller here. Hello.
Hello.
What's your name?
Betty.
Okay, you're going to show us your tricks now.
Tricks.
English ice cream.
English little. No English.
Okay, so how much is an ice cream?
5 lira, 7 lira, small, medium, big.
Five liras?
Yes.
Okay. Fetty's now going to perform his ice cream trick with all the sound effects.
Yes. Hoppa! Take ice cream. Hoppa! Bebio! Oosh! Ice cream. Hoppa! Try again.
Uh-oh. The idea is I take the ice cream, but he takes it away and throws it in here.
Why? Ice cream. Special. Very good. Very nice. Yes, please. Thank you. Uh-oh.
Got a stick and he's just taken it away Tricks. From me again and he's just taken it away from me again.
Ice cream, very good, very nice.
It's me, English little.
English little.
You
thank you very much.
Thank
have
you.
A nice day. Bye bye.
I'm in a shop called Amphora, and this is the bazaar.
Yes, very historical bazaar, Arasta Bazaar. The Byzantine times, they used these shops for horse.
We're standing in the former stables of the mosque.
Yeah.
Now, we've got some beautiful ceramic, Isnik style. Can you tell us about
it? Yeah, there are two different materials in Turkish ceramic. Quartz are from Isnik. Isnik is a small town in Bursa, famous for the material and quartz. Material is 85% quartz, and designs are from 16th century, Isnik design, we say. Another material is clay. They are made in Kütahya, Western Anatolia, a city. Famous for the ceramic. Material is clay. All of them handmade, hand-painted, hand-glazed. Designs are from 16th century.
The beautiful blue, isn't it? Turquoise blue and dark blue. Can you tell us how they got the blue, the turquoise blue?
There is a very famous blue. We say Isnik blue. They can catch only with the quartz. That's why they use quartz. Quartz ones are very difficult. They make powder form 85%, and they put 10% clay, 5% glasses mix. They use quartz because they want to catch original color. The blue mask tiles and in museum original pieces also same technique, same material.
Isnik, it closed down for a while, didn't it? For a few centuries, the Isnik potteries, but now they've reopened. Is that right?
Isnik, yes. Yes, yeah, and from 16th century designs.
Can you tell us about Isnik? When did it reopen?
Isnik is a small town in Bursa, from Istanbul by bus, 4 hours about. There are many different artists there. Also in my shop there is four artists, they are from Isnik and they are very famous in the world.
Can you tell us about this man over here, Professor Turgut Tuna?
Turgut Tuna is first academic artist in Turkey. He is teacher in Marmara University. He makes also museum pieces. Designs are 16th century and in Ottoman time. Some pieces originally in Topkapı Palace Museums.
It's made a big comeback, hasn't it? All the ceramics. Very popular with tourists.
Yes, yes. Very popular in the world. Especially designs and colors. There are four many very typical color in Turkish ceramic. Cobalt blue, turquoise blue, red and green. Also you can use in the ceramic, but not same color. Yani ceramic and quartz, the colors are different. That's why they use quartz. They want to catch original color.
Why did they use those colors? Why were they popular with the sultans, the blue?
I don't know exactly, but there are museum pieces. When you look to picture original pieces and ceramic ones, you can see the difference. The colors are very... Ceramic is too bright. That's why... They want to catch original pieces, colors, but that's why they use quartz. In quartz, in museum pieces, same.
Is there a lot of quartz in Isnik? Is that why they chose
Isnik,
that?
All quartz, they use quartz. Ceramic, only Kütahya. Kütahya is a, you know, city in Western Anatolia. They use clay, Isnik use quartz.
They established the potteries in Isnik because there was a lot of quartz there in the surrounding earth.
Mineral quartz, yeah, you can find in Isnik and Isnik area, many quartz mineral.
Who are your chief customers?
The Europe people, especially German, English, in United States people. And every country I have a customer. Sometimes India, sometimes Japan.
Do you export to those countries?
Can send every address, door to door. We work with the UPS, TNT. We can send, but we don't have shops in Europe, in other countries.
Not in any capitals, like London?
No.
Once again, what's the name of your shop?
Amphora, Arasta Bazaar.
Well, hopefully you're enlightened. Thank you very much to Anthea Page for telling us about her trip to Istanbul. One of the less talked about reasons to live in Bristol is that it's well served with a variety of many different kinds of churches, from Greek to Polish, and from the formal to the informal to suit all tastes. Two Bristolians have taken it upon themselves to do a Bristol Good Church Guide, and Dialect's Tony Gosling spoke to Bridget White, but firstly, Simon takes Dialect's Tony Gosling through the guide.
Anyway, Simon, you've done a tour right round these churches, so can you give us a bit of a whistle-stop tour around what you found?
Well, we went to about 25 churches. For music, we thought that the black churches are definitely the best. They're very lively, free. So we're looking at Potter's House, was very good. Potter's House is opposite the Trinity Road police station. There was the Redeemed Christian Church of God, which is in Stokes Croft. That's very lively. And then there's a new one called Christ the Embassy, Dean Street in St. Paul's, which actually has got a TV link to a pastor in America. For sermons, we thought the best one was Cornerstone, a pastor called Alex George, who's a very spiritual, very knowledgeable sermon. Welcome. For the welcome, well, again, the black churches, even the people in the congregation were coming up to us saying hello. And then they would announce us in, from the front and say, oh, welcome to these two, and put themselves out. After service care, definitely go to Church of England churches. They normally provide you with a cup of tea and a biscuit and a chat, along with Buckingham Chapel, which is in Richmond Road in Clifton. Buckingham Chapel, like most of the ones we went to, are classified as free churches in that they're one-off. They don't answer to anyone above them or anyone outside their group, almost always led by a pastor who's in charge. Buckingham Chapel's one of those. And most of the life in Christianity today is in these free churches.
What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, life as in vibrant, alive, got something to say. They're excited, they're enthused, they're committed to Jesus, and they might go outside their church meetings and spread the gospel outside to evangelize their friends. They got life as opposed to dead, which would be sort of following rules, not committed, not off the heart.
For a lot of people, they're quite resistant to going to church, thinking that the whole thing is going to be stuffy. And also, of course, that they're going to be going to a group of people, none of whom they know.
Yes, well, we found that as we went into the different churches, especially Buckingham Chapel in Clifton, there was a young chap in there, James, and he was really friendly to everyone, even though he's quite young, and made everyone feel at home. Woodlands, they have quite a lot of young students in there who are quite friendly, and it's a good meeting place for students in Bristol. Woodlands, it's in Woodland Road in Clifton, and it's a free church where people from every denomination go in and meet. It seems to be quite a fiery church where the music is good, the sermons are good, and it's originally founded by Rob Scott Cook, who has three or four different churches going in Bristol, so it's quite a good place to go.
Now, Simon, one of the things we constantly hear, particularly in the countryside, is that churches are closing, being sold off for houses and things. And it looks to me as if that same thing is happening in Bristol to a certain extent, because we've got the big church on St Michael's Hill being sold. Obviously, Trinity Church, opposite Trinity Police Station, that was sold many years ago. Is it fair to say that people are moving out of the establishment church and these big churches into these smaller ones?
Not necessarily smaller, but yeah, Tony, that's exactly right. They're moving away from the traditional denominations, and now people are meeting in warehouses, and they just convert a warehouse and have meetings there, and they're more lively. People want the life and the freedom rather than perhaps obeying a liturgy and being told what to do all the time.
Okay, so can you round up giving us the details of how people can find out more about your survey of the churches on the internet?
Yeah, we set up a little website called Bristol Good Church Guide, all one word, .webs.com. And on there, it's got our email address. If you want to contact us and find out the addresses and the whereabouts of the churches, etc., is bristolundergroundchurch@yahoo.co.uk. And we're happy to give you a very specific pointer to which type of church you want and where they are. 07984 727 051. We've sort of summed up in a couple of words what the main churches are about. So if you're looking for this type of thing, then go to this church. Bristol Christian Fellowship, which is on Cotton Brow, is very close-knit, sort of family thing, quite small. Woodlands, very social. If you're a student, you're probably going there already, but that's the place to go. Buckingham Chapel is very strong on doctrine, and it also helps the Romanian children here and abroad. All the black churches, as I said before, very lively and in the spirit, if you like good singing. body ministry. You might not know what that is, but that's when, as a man, they will offer you the microphone if you want to speak. Cornerstone, Elim, Salvation Army, Redeemed Christian Church of God do that. Trinity Tabernacle by the Lawrence Hill Roundabout is very happening. It's probably the most central, and they have a drop-in for the homeless. Cornerstone is born again pastor. Pip and Jay, strong leadership. Christchurch Clifton, very big, and has a reputation that it's supposed to be the intellectual church. Christ the Embassy, as I said, has got an international pastor link from God TV. The Sanctuary is very alive. Ivy is small, that's in Ashley Hill. Vineyard, a well-established church, is fairly casual, if you like that, as is Grace Church. And Vineyard has a prison ministry, in Muller Road, that is, yeah. The New Testament Church of God, which is in Stapleton Road, very committed. So that's about a dozen churches for you. And as I say, if you want more specifics, exactly what you're looking for, we can probably tailor it down for you.
And remind us of your email address and website.
bristolundergroundchurch@yahoo.co.uk and bristolgoodchurchguide.webs, that's WEBS, .com/.
Bridget White there, who has helped to prepare a Bristol Good Church Guide. It's online on the internet at bristolgoodchurchguide.webs.com. So if you just put in bristolgoodchurchguide.webs.com, that should take you straight there. You can also contact Simon and Bridget at Bristol Underground Church, all one word, at yahoo.co.uk. Michael Noyce once again introduces us to some new interesting music. He invites an artist around every week to sit on his sofa and have a cup of tea and a biscuit with him and play a track. And this week, he's been speaking to Elegance.
On my sofa today, I have Rich and Rose from Elegance.
Hello.
Hiya. Right, so as you're called Elegance, you're obviously a heavy metal band, is that right?
Well, that's how we started.
Really?
No.
So tell us, how did you get together and how did you start?
Well, we were in a tribute band at ATM. And that's how we originally met, and at ATM Bristol, which is access to music for music students. And we just hit it off straight away, really. We were in Alicia Keys tribute band and we had a gig and it went really well. And then after that, things developed and we found that we had a mutual love of soul music. And it sort of kicked off from there, didn't it, Rich?
Yeah. And we both write our own stuff and are creative, so we thought, although we've enjoyed doing the covers, why don't we see what we can do with some original material?
I gather you're also in a Doors tribute act as well, though, Rich.
I am, yeah. That's a different project, yeah.
Yes, well, it's just one of those things that because you started out as a tribute act, whether or not a lot of people seem to think that being in a tribute act is the easy, lazy way around of it, in the fact that you just do a load of covers and then it's easier to get gigs than doing your own stuff.
Yeah,
and it's actually easier to do that than to do your own stuff. But
yeah, that's an interesting question. I think, like with everything, there's pros and cons to, you know, going either way, going down the originals route or the covers route. I think there's a difference really between being a covers band and being a tribute band. A challenge is with being a tribute band is not just to do your own version of a song, but to actually nail it and sound exactly like the original. And on top of that, you've got the challenge of looking like them as well, to the best of your ability. And it's good fun. Within the band I'm in, Slamming the Doors, which is, as you say, a Doors tribute act, there's a lot to work on there because they're quite an iconic band. The image is very strong. Yeah, and it's good fun trying to get it as accurate and authentic as possible. I don't think it's necessarily easier. I suppose, you know, you haven't got to write the songs, but the challenge is to nail them word perfect and note perfect, really. So I wouldn't say it's easy. It's just different.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking myself, to be honest. But do you think you'd have found it easier getting gigs as an Alicia Keys tribute act or as Elegance, or have you found that people have been receptive to you?
I found that people have been receptive to us as Elegance. I'm not sure if we'd be more successful if we were an Alicia Keys tribute band, because we didn't actually go out as a band to do that and experiment. But I think that we're growing as Elegance and people are liking our stuff. So
I think it's because we love those songs so much anyway. We keep a couple of the Alicia Keys songs in the set that we do. It's useful to have a couple of known songs in the set that people know the words to and they can have a sing-along to if they perhaps haven't heard the Elegance stuff before. Draws them in. And as I say, we love the songs anyway.
But you're happier doing your own stuff, really?
Yeah.
I think it's more fulfilling to do your own music because we're creative people, we like to write and stuff, so it is more fulfilling for us to be pursuing our own music. And
we both got a kind of similar outlook on life as well, which is we believe in being positive, trying to give out a good vibe, and when you do your own stuff, you can build that into the songs, you know, and craft your songs around that. And
we have a positive message to share with the world.
Oh, well, that's good. And talking about that, you're going to play us one of your songs now.
Yes, this is called In Love With Life. It was written by myself and Richard. And
mostly by Rose, this one.
Yeah.
And what's it about?
It's about basically just being grateful for life and just the message that life is precious and we should love life because we only have one life. It's short. We have to make the most of it and we have to move forward in a loving sort of manner and unite together because we sort of lost our way with love. And it's bringing us back to the root.
Fantastic. So this is Elegance with In Love With Life. Was In Love With Life by Elegance. If people like what they hear, how can they get in touch with you, or is there any way they can listen to your music or download it or anything?
Yep, well, our main page is Facebook. We're also on Reverb Nation, and you can find that at reverbnation.com/elegant sound. And we're also on SoundCloud, which is soundcloud.com/elegance-4.
And if you go to the SoundCloud website, you can listen to a couple of our tunes that are on there. Couple of different tunes. Hope you enjoy them. Elegance is going to be playing at a new venue that's opening probably middle to end of November. It's called Harvey's Cellar and it's on Denmark Street, and it's a cocktail bar stroke venue stroke museum. Actually, it's where Harvey's Bristol Cream, there are other sherries available, is where Harvey's Bristol Cream used to be sold from. And yeah, it's a really cracking little venue, and we're going to be playing there on a weekly basis from the opening date, late November. Watch our Facebook page for more info.
Yeah, if you go to our Facebook page, we're always updating it and keeping you posted with gigs and stuff that come up. So that's your best place to find us.
Okay, so Elegance, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
That was Michael Noyce there speaking with Elegance. Our serialisation of the swashbuckling, I put my teeth in, classic Treasure Island continues with part two of chapter 26, read wonderfully by Malcolm Grieve.
The excitement of these last manoeuvres had somewhat interfered with the watch I had kept hitherto sharply enough upon the coxswain. Even then, I was still so much interested waiting for the ship to touch that I had quite forgot the peril that hung over my head and stood craning over the starboard bulwarks and watching the ripples spreading wide before the bows. I might have fallen without a struggle for my life had not a sudden disquietude seized upon me and made me turn my head. Perhaps I heard a creak or saw his shadow moving with the tail of my eye. Perhaps it was an instinct like a cat's. But sure enough, when I looked round, there was Hans already halfway towards me with the dirk in his right hand. We must both have cried aloud when our eyes met, but while mine was the shrill cry of terror, his was a roar of fury like a charging bull's. At the same instant he threw himself forward, and I leapt sideways towards the bows. As I did so, I left hold of the tiller, which sprang sharply to leeward, and I think this saved my life, for it struck Hans across the chest and stopped him for the moment dead. Before he could recover, I was safe out of the corner where he had me trapped, with all the deck to dodge about. Just forward of the mainmast I stopped, drew a pistol from my pocket, took a cool aim, though he had already turned and was once more coming directly after me, and drew the trigger. The hammer fell, but there followed neither flash nor sound. The priming was useless with sea water. I cursed myself for my neglect. Why had not I long before reprimed and reloaded my only weapons? Then I should not have been, as now, a mere fleeing sheep before this butcher. Wounded as he was, it was wonderful how fast he could move. His grizzled hair tumbling over his face, and his face itself as red as a red ensign with his haste and fury. I had no time to try my other pistol, nor indeed much inclination, for I was sure it would be as useless. One thing I saw plainly, I must not simply retreat before him, as a moment since he had so nearly boxed me in the stern. Once so caught, a 9 or 10 inches of that blood-stained dirk would be my last experience on this side of eternity. I placed my palms against the mainmast, which was of a goodish bigness, and waited, every nerve upon the stretch. Seeing that I meant to dodge, he also paused, and a moment or two passed in feints upon his part, and corresponding movements upon mine. It was such a game as I had often played at home about the rocks of Black Hill Cove, but never before, you may be sure, with such a wildly beating heart as now. Still, as I say, it was a boy's game, and I thought I could hold my own at it against an elderly seaman with a wounded thigh. Indeed, my courage had begun to rise so high that I allowed myself a few darting thoughts on what would be the end of the affair. And while I saw certainly that I could spin it out for long, I saw no hope of any ultimate escape. Well, while things stood thus, suddenly the Hispaniola struck, staggered, ground for an instant in the sand, and then, swift as a blow, canted over to the port side, till the deck stood at an angle of 45 degrees, and about a puncheon of water splashed into the scupper holes and lay in a pool between the deck and the bulwark. We were both of us capsized in a second, and both of us rolled almost together into the scuppers, the dead red cap, with his arms still spread out, tumbling stiffly after us. So near were we, indeed, that my head came against the coxswain's foot with a crack that made my teeth rattle. Blow and all, I was the first afoot again, for Hans had got involved with the dead body. The sudden canting of the ship had made the deck no place for running on. I had to find some new way of escape, and that upon the instant, for my foe was almost upon me. Quick as thought, I sprang into the mizzen shrouds, rattled up hand over hand, and did not draw a breath until I was seated on the cross-trees. I had been saved by being prompt. The dirk had struck not half a foot below me as I pursued my upward flight, and there stood Israel Hans with his mouth open and his face upturned to mine, a perfect statue of surprise and disappointment. Now that I had a moment to myself, I lost no time in changing the priming of my pistol, and then having one ready for service, and to make assurance doubly sure, I proceeded to draw the load of the other, and recharge it afresh from the beginning. My new employment struck hands all of a heap. He began to see the dice going against him, and after an obvious hesitation, he also hauled himself heavily into the shrouds, and with the dirk in his teeth, began slowly and painfully to mount. It cost him no end of time and groans to haul his wounded leg behind him, and I had quietly finished my arrangements before he was much more than a third of the way up. Then with a pistol in either hand, I addressed him. "One more step, Mr. Hans," said I, "and I'll blow your brains out. Dead men don't bite, you know," I added with a chuckle. He stopped instantly. I could see by the working of his face that he was trying to think, and the process was so slow and laborious that in my newfound security I laughed aloud. At last, with a swallow or two, he spoke, his face still wearing the same expression of extreme perplexity. In order to speak, he had to take the dagger from his mouth, but in all else, he remained unmoved. "Jim," says he, "I reckon we're fouled, you and me, and we'll have to sign articles. I'd have had you, but for that there lurch. But I don't have no luck, not I. And I reckon I'll have to strike, which comes hard, you see, for a master mariner to a ship's yunker like you, Jim." I was drinking in his words and smiling away, as conceited as a cock on a wall, when all in a breath, back went his right hand over his shoulder. Something sang like an arrow through the air. I felt a blow and then a sharp pang, and there I was, pinned by the shoulder to the mast. In the horrid pain and surprise of the moment, I can scarce say it was by my own volition, and I am sure it was without a conscious aim, both my pistols went off, and both escaped out of my hands. They did not fall alone. With a choked cry, the coxswain loosed his grip upon the shrouds and plunged head first into the water.
Many thanks as ever to Malcolm Grieve for superbly reading Robert Louis Stevenson's Treasure Island. Tim Burrows has recorded a poem for us, which is very fitting when we look back on the Remembrance Day weekend last week. And the poem is called "Across Stands in Remembrance."
Across stands. Across, white, stands, simple, dignified, patriotic, with a poppy, blood-red, fragile, fragrant, in a graveyard of endless crosses, sacrificial, sanctified, martyred. The crosses stick into the ground, scarred, shell-holed, entrenched. The mud hides the fields of bones, broken, splintered, shattered, by shells, explosive, tearing, deafening, scoured by machine-gun bullets, scything, searing, puncturing, by poison gas, burning, blinding, suffocating, wreathed in barbed wire, sharp, curled, ensnaring, pierced by sharp 12-inch bayonets, sharp, lunging, disemboweling. Across stands, simple, dignified, patriotic, in remembrance.
Thank you very much for Tim for reading that. Time for the What's On Guide, and he's here today not wearing any interesting rock and roll t-shirts today, just plain black, very stylish. Jeff Sparks with the What's On Guide.
Thank you. Hello, this is your What's On Guide from Dialect. Starting with Thursday, 24th of November, Rita Lynch will be performing with support from Annette Berlin at the Thunderbolt in Bath Road, Bristol. This will be the album launch for Rita Lynch's new album, Crack On. Tickets are £3 in advance and £4 on the door, and doors open at 7:30 p.m. Into Friday, 25th of November, Iron On Maiden will be performing with original Iron Maiden guitarist Dennis Stratton at the Victoria in Victoria Road, Swindon. Tickets are £10 in advance and £12 on the door, and doors open at 8 p.m. On to Song of the Week, and I present Vintage Trouble. This group formed about 2 years ago in Los Angeles, USA, and in that short space of time they've appeared on Later with Jules Holland, supported Bon Jovi, and recently won Classic Rock Magazine's Best New Band Award. This is Not All Right By Me from their debut album, The Bomb Shelter Sessions.
Sunset walk through the streets. Well, I could see and hear, but I couldn't feel or breathe. From tuning out the static world, I've lost the sense of peace. And that's not alright by me. The LA Times and Channel 5 in New York Magazine, they stain my soul, and I know you know what I mean. They tear apart the hopeful heart till it doesn't bleed or dream, and that's not alright by me. Pull on the road that lifts the sun back to the sky. Hold a hand, cry on a shoulder. Whistle in the wind and open up your eyes and feel again, feel again. Where the roads cross and time stands still, I'm frozen in my tracks against my will. The street light is dimming and it won't shine again until I say it's not alright by me.
Vintage Trouble with Not Alright By Me from the debut album The Bomb Shelter Sessions. For more information you can check out at www.vintagetrouble.com. On Saturday 26th November, Vintage Trouble will be performing with support from Kill It Kid at 53 Degrees, which is in Brook Street, Preston. Tickets are £9 in advance and doors open at 7:30 p.m. Finally, on Sunday 27th of November, The Zombies, as part of their 50th anniversary tour, will be performing a hometown concert at the Alban Arena in St Albans. Tickets are £22.50 in advance, and doors open at 8 p.m. That's all from me. Thanks for listening, and have a great week. Take care, and goodbye.
Well, Rita Lynch and Annette Berlin on the same lineup sounds fantastic. And if you don't know what that entails, then Rita Lynch will be performing some stripped-back rock and roll of the most raw kind, and I heartily recommend it. Thank you very much to Jeff, of course.
BCFM Community Radio for Bristol on 93.2 FM. For more information or to listen live on the internet, go to our website at www.bcfm.org.uk. BCFM, your radio.
Well, that's the end of the show. Harking back to Sakia Yildirim's interview, of course, we said that you could donate money via IHH, and the website for that is www.ihh.org. turkishdialect.org.tr. TR being, of course, because the website is a Turkish domain name. Well, that's all from Dialect this week. Our studio guest was, of course, Sakay Ildirim. Thank you very much, and hopefully we will have him back in future weeks. Our features were from Anthea Page, Michael Lewis and Tony Gosling, and we had another episode of Treasure Island read by Malcolm Grieve. Tim Burrows treated us to a poem, and Jeff Sparks wrote the Watson Guide, and the studio engineer was Julia Ryden, and the producer was Michaela Dennis. If you would like to listen again or catch up with any of our previous shows, you can find us on dialectradio.co.uk and, of course, on the Bristol Community Radio website, which is bcfm.org.uk. Goodbye from me, John Peters Colman, and I'll see you next week. Like you!